Well, there's another drug raid gone wrong. Earlier this week, Yuri Stamps, a 68-year-old grandfather of 12, was killed in his home in Framingham, Massachusetts. Stamp lived in the same house with a woman whose son and another man were arrested in the raid. But Stamps himself was not under investigation. He was described by neighbors as the nicest guy in the world. So how and why was he killed? Well, the police won't let us know. All they've said in a statement was that Yuri Stamps was tragically and fatally struck by a bullet which was discharged from a SWAT officer's rifle. Who the officer is, why the weapon was fired, they won't say. He's just going to be added to the long list of bodies piling up from America's war on drugs. Now, earlier, I caught up with Radley Balco, senior editor at Reason Magazine and Reason.com, and I first noted this, unfortunately, is not the first time that Radley and I have spoken about incidents like this. Before getting into why it's happening on a broad scale, I wanted to look into the details of this case. I asked Radley if he found it odd that the police wouldn't reveal the name of the officer who shot the man or even say that he was shot in the official statement.
Yeah, it was sort of a masterful use of the passive voice, which we see a lot in police shootings, actually. No, I'm not really surprised that they haven't released the officer's name either. That almost never happens. In fact, there are some cases in Virginia where it's been years and we still don't know the name of the officer who shot someone. So police officers have privacy rights that we don't have as citizens a lot of times.
Well, yeah, because if you think about, if the tables had been turned in this example and it was a civilian that had shot a police officer, his name would have been released to the press, right? He would have been on every news channel, every newspaper today, probably with his mugshot.
Yeah, and every, parking ticket or traffic ticket or any other conviction he's had would immediately be released to the press. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a double standard, and it's, it's something worth trying to get reformed, but, it is what it is.
Well, maybe while the police, they're saying that the investigation in this matter could take 3 or 4 weeks, and it's understandable, right? You want to let them investigate, but there's one thing that they must know for sure by now, which is probably who shot the man, So by not even giving us a little inkling of information, do you think that that just fuels more distrust of the police, when it comes to the public, that they're hiding something from us, that we assume that they're trying to cover something up?
Well, sure. I mean, it certainly does. And, it feeds the notion that when police investigate other police officers, they do it in a very sort of secretive, closed off from the public manner. And it does fuel it. I mean, I reported on a case last year in Georgia where the police shot and killed a pastor named Jonathan Ayers during a botched drug operation. And in that case, they cleared the guy, the officer, within a few weeks. And then it came out afterward, actually, that in a lawsuit and then a local news station reported that the officer wasn't even allowed to hold a gun or a badge. He hadn't received enough training. Now, how all that wouldn't have come out during the initial internal investigation is sort of mind-blowing, and it gives you sort of an indication of just how thorough these internal investigations can be.
Oh, yeah, it's very encouraging. Now, let's get to the bigger picture here, right? Why this is happening, because there's a massive drug war being waged in our country, because we have SWAT teams that are being sent into people's homes on nonviolent raids, right? These are drug raids. So at the end of the day, I mean, are more bodies piling up? Are they killing more people than they actually are saving with the tactics that they use in fighting the drug war?
Well, I mean, that's a hard question to answer because it's always hard to say, prove what isn't happening. But, clearly, I mean, even if every one of these raids hit the right house, even if no one ever died, no dogs were ever shot, I think there is something fundamentally disturbing about this idea that 150 times a day in this country we send SWAT teams into private homes to serve warrants for what are ultimately consensual crimes. I mean, the vast majority of these raids are not to find suspected murderers or, suspected bank robbers or rapists. The vast majority are for drug crimes, and these are crimes that are consensual, that aren't violent. And these raids introduce violence to the situation, which I think is really the fundamental problem.
Now, I know that you've done a lot of research on this. Do you have any kind of figures that you can give us? I mean, the percentage of raids that have been botched in the last year, the last 10 years, 20 years?
Well, it's a hard figure to come by because police departments are notorious for not wanting to report their mistakes. The vast majority of the people that these raids happen to tend to be, fairly powerless. They don't have access to attorneys. They're afraid to go to the media. They're afraid to file complaints. Just going by sort of news reports that we do have, I would say, about once a week I get a Google alert or somebody sends me a link to some story where the police got the wrong house by mistake. Now, it's important to remember, though, I mean, in this case, they got the right house, this case in Boston. They got the guy they were looking for. They found drugs. But you had an innocent bystander, a unarmed innocent bystander who was shot and killed. And that's that, again, goes to the sort of inherent dangerousness of these raids and the very low margin for error in them. You know, I don't think this officer intended to kill Mr. Stamps. I mean, I don't think this was malicious. It was probably a mistake due to the volatility of the situation. And it's a great argument for keeping these raids reserved for situations where you have somebody who is an immediate threat to other people, which was clearly not the case here.
Well, that's the thing, right? They didn't find any weapons inside of this house. So how volatile the situation, you know, might have been where they had to or they accidentally shot this 60-year-old man, you really have to wonder, do you think that anything will change, that they might change their tactics, stop using SWAT teams because of incidents like this?
I mean, I am sensing sort of a change in the public perception of these raids, and there's also you can see a change in the way the local media covers them. The Boston Herald had a great article today that was actually pretty skeptical of the way that these tactics are used. And so, you know, you sort of hope that that would precipitate a change in policy when one of these incidents happens. I can tell you that, you know, I wrote a paper on this, and I've been writing about it for about 5 years now. And usually what happens after one of these high-profile incidents is there's a lot of sort of hand-wringing and a lot of complaints, and people come forward with their own stories. And then within about 4 or 5 years, things are right back to the way they were before the incident happened. There have been some examples. The case in Atlanta from a few years ago produced some real change. And the mayor, Mayor Calvo in Maryland, whose dogs were killed during a mistaken raid, actually got some legislation passed that made SWAT teams a little more transparent. So, you know, that stuff's good, but I'm, you know, it's hard to be optimistic because the history doesn't, you know, bear out any reason for it.
But you're right, and, you know, the few pieces that I read about this, at least there was some skepticism coming from the media here and the fact that we're not being given any information. Radley, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be on again. Thanks.